goddamn church, any goddamn mosque, any goddamn celestial, including Seraphim and Cherubim. Places. Here we go. Suffer, suffer for world.
Amen.
Enjoy for heaven.
Amen.
Christians go they yab.
Amen.
In spiritum heavenus.
Amen.
Muslims go they call.
Amen.
Allahu Akbar.
Amen.
Suffer, suffer for world.
Amen.
Enjoy for heaven.
Amen.
Christians go they yab.
Amen.
In spiritum heavenus.
Amen.
Muslims go they call.
Amen.
Allahu Akbar. Open your eye everywhere. Archbishop na miliki, Pope na enjoyment, Imam na gbaladun. Archbishop na miliki, Pope na enjoyment, Imam na gbaladun. Sister, waiting you go here. Archbishop de for London, Pope de for Rome, Imam de for Mecca. Archbishop de for London, Pope de for Rome, Imam de for Mecca. My people them go they follow Bishop, them go follow Pope, them go follow Imam, them go for London, them go for Rome, them go for Mecca, them go carry all the money. Them go Juba Bishop, Juba Pope, Juba Imam. Them go start to yab themselves. In spirit of heaven is contraption right opposite you. Now we are back here. This is what happens to we Africans every day. Now, which I'm going to tell you now, na secret, na confidential matter. Don't tell anybody outside. Now between me and you. Now listen. As I say before, it happens to all of us every day. We Africans all over the world. Now. Listen. Standing, them go pack themselves in like sanding. Them they faint, them they wake like cock.
Uhuru, and welcome to Solidarity Not Charity, the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee, which is the organization that was formed by and is led by the African People's Socialist Party for the purpose of organizing political and financial support from the white community with the African liberation struggle worldwide. Glad that you've joined us today. My name is Sandy Thompson, and today we're going to share with you a speech that was delivered by African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess about, 2 weeks ago now, in Oakland, California, at the Uhuru House, at an event that took place there. And in this speech, it was a PowerPoint presentation that she gave, but in listening to it, the audio alone is quite sufficient, very well tells the story without us being able to see the slides over the radio. The PowerPoint is focusing on the economic crisis of imperialism. And if you've been listening to Uhuru Radio today, oh my gosh, you heard a phenomenal discussion that took place from 11 to 1 U.S. Eastern Time. And really want to encourage listeners, if you have not yet been tuning in to that program, to do that, because every week it's I'm learning so much in listening to it about the economy, about the sort of paper tiger nature of U.S. imperialism, how it's all crashing down around them, this long-standing parasitic relationship that U.S. imperialism, worldwide imperialism, white power capitalist economy, how it's crashing down around them with the growing resistance of African and other colonized peoples around the world. And just to understand the inner workings of it and to really understand it is really helpful to us as organizers and as activists and people who want to change the world and make the world, be a part of creating a new world where you don't have a small sector of the world's population being, you know, the white population, the population in the imperialist centers of America and Europe, consuming all the world's resources, living with the assumption of wealth and security off the backs of the terrible suffering and loss of life and theft of resources of the rest of the people of the world, and in particular of African people on the continent of Africa as well as in the U.S. and dispersed throughout the world. Tune in at 11 o'clock, 11 o'clock U.S. Eastern Time every Sunday, and listen to and be a part of that discussion, because you can ask questions, you can really get clear on any questions that you may have about what's going on today with the world economy and with the progress of the movement for liberation. So this presentation that Chairwoman Penny Hess made is also really informative about that, just that very same topic. So I think you're going to enjoy it. I'm going to go ahead and start the recording now. This is Penny Hess, Chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, speaking on December 7th, 2008 in Oakland, California at the Uhuru House there.
Uhuru, it's an honor to be here today. I want to thank Bakri. I want to join in saluting Chairman Omali Ishitello and Ona Ishitello, who are here from St. Petersburg, Florida. And my name is Penny Hess, and I am the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And as Bakri said, that is the organization formed by the African People's Socialist Party, and that we work under the leadership of the party and the Uhuru movement by going into the white community and organizing other white people to stand in solidarity with the movement for African liberation. And Bakri and the International People's Democratic Uhuru movement asked me to present this PowerPoint that we give, this presentation that that we give in a lot of programs that talks about the current crisis of imperialism, the crisis of the United States, the economic crisis, what's going on, and what is the basis for what is happening right now. So I'm gonna show this, and if people have any questions, I think there'll be questions and answers at the end. So the crisis of imperialism and the struggle for African liberation. Just to start by saying that the analysis, the understandings in this presentation come from the political theory of Chairman Omali Yeshitela, and that is called African internationalism. And without that, we can't really understand what is really happening in the world. And we'll see, this unfolds through an analysis of how things got to be the way they are and what it's going to take to change the world. So in the headlines, we watch the news or we look at the headlines, we see war, we see terror, we see poverty, deep poverty, mass starvation, oppression, African people and peoples around the world being pushed out of their homes, out of their towns, and displaced by all different kinds of factors, from famine to US-backed wars to other kinds of things that are forcing the peoples around the world to out of their homes. We know that all around the world, though, that people are struggling for control of their land, their resources, their oil, their diamonds, and all the resources that people have that the United States and Europe are used to and built on stealing for the benefit of Europe and North America. And inside the United States, we see poverty, we see mass imprisonment of the African and Mexican populations. We see escalating police containment policies against the African and Mexican communities. But we also see struggle going on inside the United States as well, struggles for self-determination, land, reparations, and liberation. But especially the white society, what they call the middle class, because we know when Obama and the economic, you know, news people, where they say that there's a crisis in the middle class, that means white. So we see that white people in the United States and Europe have fears about the greatest economic crisis since the 1930s. And what we see is that the lifestyle of opportunity and plenty at the expense of others is coming to an end. In fact, there's been books written, there's all kinds of discussion out there that the US is in crisis, we're approaching the end of parasitic capitalism as we know it, and it's the end of the US hegemony and domination over the entire world. The end of the US being the sole superpower. So what we're seeing right now is an economic crisis as well as war and other things, where we see the stock market is in an absolute crash. If anybody follows the stock market, it's down below 8,000. It was at 15,000, I'm talking about the Dow, about a couple of months ago, it was at 15,000, now it's down, you know, to 8,000. And this is a lot of crisis for Wall Street, for the white population. We see U.S. housing prices in free fall. Foreclosures are skyrocketing all over the country. They're saying that one out of every 10 homeowners right now is in foreclosure or in default. That housing construction, of course, is totally stopped. Uncompleted housing abounds. And there's whole neighborhoods that are abandoned because of this foreclosure situation that's going on. Just this week, the news came out that unemployment in this country is at a 40-year high. There was 533,000 jobs lost in November alone. And that the total for the year is 2,000 jobs lost. But when you add to that all the people who were already unemployed, who have stopped looking for a job, who would like a job, or who are underemployed, you can double that. And the real unemployment numbers overall in the United States right now are something like 12.5 to 13%, regardless of what they tell you on the news. And for the African community, in some places, as people know, it's 40, 50, 60%. And they're saying that as this crisis deepens, it could even be 80% unemployment in the African community. So we know that homelessness is at an all-time high, that last year there was an estimated 700,000 children that went hungry in the United States, and now things are so much worse than they were then. Food banks are overwhelmed, and tent cities are growing all over the country. The African community, this is something that is not really talked about, is hardest hit by foreclosures and the subprime mortgage crisis, or the collapse. This is something that, you know, President-elect Obama is not addressing at all. Nobody is talking about. They're saying, you know, they're trying to put into place things that can help people going into foreclosure. Well, what about, you know, the African communities like Atlanta, Detroit, Cleveland, Ohio, Baltimore, where tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of homes have already been lost? What people, just to refresh you about what happened in terms of subprime mortgages. Subprime mortgages, these are predatory lending schemes. They're adjustable rate mortgages. In other words, you start out at a certain interest rate on your mortgage so that in addition to what you're paying for the house, the principal, you're paying an interest rate on that loan that starts out low and doubles, triples, quadruples after a year or 2 years. And this is what's happening right now, this process. As people got their mortgages a couple of years ago, now they've reset and they can't afford it. Maybe it started out at $800 a month, now it's $1,600 a month. People can't afford to pay that. But what happened that's even more significant in a certain way is that Wall Street bankers targeted African and Mexican communities and then took those mortgages and reinvested them in their own hedge funds and their money market funds in a way that was, you know, that was very risky for the stock market. And what they did was they invested them, made money, reinvested them, and certain corporations that have already collapsed, like Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, these places reinvested up to 6 or 7 times the same mortgage. It's really, you know, it's sort of mind-boggling because they don't even understand it. But this is what happened, and this collapsed Wall Street. But in the meantime, before the collapse, the Wall Street bankers made literally hundreds of billions of dollars off the subprime mortgages. African people are now losing their homes by the millions, and the bankers are getting bailed out with your money, your taxpayers' money. So what subprime was financial apartheid. In 2005, African people making $100,000 or more were given subprime mortgages more often than white people making $35,000 or less. And let me just explain that the subprime mortgage is opposed to what they call the prime mortgage. That's where you supposedly have a good credit rating. The subprime is supposedly for people who have a bad credit rating. But that is totally bogus. Subprime means it went to the African and Mexican community, because the statistics are, again, that even African people making well over $100,000 a year were still given subprime mortgages in some cities up to 75%. So in predominantly African cities, 85% of all subprime mortgages are now in foreclosure. Now, I just want to take the case of Cleveland, Ohio. It's really hard to understand, to get this information. just by looking at the news or even going on the internet. This information I found out in British press, in the British press on the internet, that Cleveland, Ohio has lost 77,000 homes, and this is from earlier this year, it's much greater now, in predominantly African communities of the city. And I mean, just think about that. That if you take that there's four people minimum in each household, you're talking about the number of people that's as big as Oakland, really. And I mean, it's a phenomenal amount. There should be a huge amount of federal money just going to that, to deal with that situation. There should be a bailout, and these cities are asking for a bailout. And of course, you know, maybe they'll get it, but it's not going to affect the people that it really needs. So also we're seeing in this economic situation that we're facing right now that large and small banks are collapsing. They can't stay afloat because they were involved in this reinvesting as well, the reinvesting in the subprime mortgage loans. It's called derivatives. It's called mortgage-backed securities. All the banks, all of the funds, like in the state of Florida, the state of California, they all invested people's pensions in that. That's why all this bankruptcy is going on in the immediate situation. We have the U.S. auto industry is bankrupt. And this is really important because it's not just, you know, like another one of these corporations going bankrupt by itself, but it is very psychologically damaging to the American psyche to have its main brands that are known around the world, like General Motors, Ford, you know, Coca-Cola, things that America is known for, to be going back. And that's what's happening. And we have these CEOs who are still getting their Christmas bonuses of $1.8 million, while the workers are, you know, are getting nothing. And we know that the CEOs flew from Detroit, from the auto industry, flew to Washington, D.C. for the Senate hearings in private jets while they're asking for, you know, they're asking for a bailout for them. Right now, we see that credit card debt and car loans are also going into default in record numbers. And I was reading an interesting thing, that the month of November, the second largest credit card use or purchases on people's credit cards in the whole United States went for food. So it shows the declining economic situation in this country. Malls are going bankrupt, and they're saying that the whole situation with the retail stores is so bad that many, not just stores or big box stores, but even the malls themselves are going to be bankrupt after this Christmas season. And, you know, they talked about Black Friday, as they call it, the day after Thanksgiving, where they count on so many people buying stuff that their records go from red ink into black ink. But so they said it went up this year, but actually 70% of it was in such deeply discounted products that it didn't really help them at all. It didn't help their books. And just to say, this is another index a lot of people don't know about, but it's more important than the Wall Street indexes or, you know, the stock market itself. It's called the Baltic Dry Index. And the Baltic Dry Index is the index or a chart of all the shipping, all the commodities that are shipped across the seas. And since June of this year, the Baltic Dry Index has fallen by 92%, so that nothing is being shipped from China. And you know how much stuff we count on coming from China? I'm talking about food, everything we wear, all of that. They're not loading the ships. There are ships in ports all around the world that can't be unloaded because the people who are supposed to be getting the products can't afford it. They have no credit. They have no letter of credit for it. So in June of this year, the Baltic Dry Index was at 15,000. Right now it's at 715. 715. So it has completely collapsed. And that is something that's really significant, because they're not talking about that. But that is an indicator of how shaky this whole economic situation is. We have states and cities here in California, Florida, Philadelphia as a city, Phoenix, Atlanta, Cleveland, Detroit. They want bailouts. They want bailouts from the United States government. Now, the bailout that just went to the bankers in September? It turned out to be $850 billion. And to be really clear about that, that helped the bankers. That helped Wall Street. That helped maintain the lifestyle, the mansions of these criminals that they call Wall Street bankers. They can keep their stock options, all of that stuff. It will not help the economy or the regular people of this country in any possible way. Now, all of the bailouts, that bailout was only one. All the bailouts that the government has been giving over the last 6 months adds up to close to $8.5 trillion. Remember, a trillion is a million times a million. So just to show you how that compares, this is everything that the government, that this government has spent on NASA, Vietnam War, invasion of Iraq, the New Deal, the Korean War, the SNL crisis, the race to the moon, the Louisiana Purchase, and the Marshall Plan. That's this. This second one, and that's adjusted for inflation. The second one is the U.S. cost of World War II, the Second Imperialist War, and the third is the bailout debt that the U.S. has so far. And that's the $8.5 billion plus all the money that went to Bear Stearns, that went to AIG, that went, and all the time. And if you really read the paper in the business page, there'll be articles, little articles that say, oh, and by the way, they put $800, $700 billion into the stock market yesterday. I mean, they're doing this all the time. And so the U.S. national debt is $10 trillion, blah, blah, blah. $10.6 trillion, almost $11 trillion, $35,000 for every U.S. citizen. And that is an increase, because have you seen on the internet those debt clocks, and they keep running every second? That's an increase of $2.27 billion a day. And it's increased to, you know, $6 trillion since 2005. And if you add the total, what's called the liabilities of the United States government, that would be like what is promised out for the next 50 years for Social Security, Medicare, and other kinds of social programs, the liabilities are a minimum of $53 trillion. So the gross national product of the entire world is, that means all of the products, everything that the entire world's products from every country is worth is $66 trillion, and the U.S. is in debt $64 trillion, and it's going up every day. So the U.S. is bankrupt. Now, I think it's really interesting that, and typical, that the United States government is, and especially the economic, you know, Wall Street, they're blaming the African community for the crisis. They're saying it was the subprime, the people who took subprime loans for their houses when they couldn't afford it. That's the problem. And if you notice how in the auto collapse, the auto industry collapse, they're saying that the problem is the unions, and that, you know, and of course the auto workers is the last, probably at least 50% African union. And they're saying that they won't budge on their wages that they're getting, which actually now they are negotiating. But heck, all of these criminals on Wall Street, they got everything they wanted. They're still getting their Christmas bonuses of 1.8 $1.92 million. That's their bonus, not their salary. They're still getting it this year with the bailout. So this is Paulson, Henry Paulson, who is the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States. He's also was a CEO of Goldman Sachs, which benefited the most from the bailout. Goldman Sachs did. And that the U.S. bailout rescued Paulson and his friends, other bankers. And Paulson personally made $150 million, not $150, $150 million from Goldman Sachs over the years. And he has stock options, I'm sure, worth a lot more than that. And he benefited most from the bailout. And again, there's nothing that bailout is going to do to rescue anything that anybody in this room is facing. So how do these bailouts get financed? They print the money and add it to the debt. Literally. And who finances the U.S. debt? China and Japan finances the debt. That means they lend the United States this $2 billion every single day. And China is saying, because the dollar is going down, and the United Nations is predicting that the dollar will have a, quote, hard landing, that means the dollar is going to collapse. And this is really going to happen. And if you have any kind of retirement fund, you should take it out. You should take it out, because you will not get it. You will not get it. That the dollar is going to collapse. I mean, the world economists who are the experts on this can say that. And this country knows it too, but they pretend it's not happening. But China's saying, because of this dollar collapse, it's tired of loaning all this money to the U.S. It doesn't want to do it anymore. The Arab countries are also the countries that loan to the U.S. debt, but they're broke because they're only getting $40 a barrel for oil, and they're saying that it costs them $95 a barrel to produce the oil, so they don't have the money now, plus Yemen, Dubai, and all these countries, all their oil is gone, and Britain is the third largest contributor that gives loans to the U.S., and if anybody reads the news, you can see that Britain is more bankrupt than the United States is. So this is the situation that the U.S. is facing. And personally, I mean, just in terms of the movement, it's a good thing, because this is white power. It's built on the enslavement of African people. It's built on colonialism around the world, and genocide against the indigenous people. And it's a good thing that it's falling down. So millions of people voted for Barack Obama with the promise of hope and change. But Barack Obama represents white power and the status quo. And just to say, so who is his cabinet? Eric Holder, Attorney General. Eric Holder was a lawyer who represented Chiquita Banana Corporation in Latin America when it went to trial because it was paying death squads that killed 4,000 Africans and indigenous people in Colombia. He represented Chiquita Banana and made sure nobody went to jail. They just had to pay a little fine for that. And he supports the three strikes you're out. He wants mandatory minimums. He's fought for it. He wants the discriminatory sentencing to stay. And this is a person that just is going to continue to carry out the war against the African community, the counterinsurgency. Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State. She wasn't against the war. I mean, when her husband was president, he had sanctions against the Iraqi people where more people died than during the invasion of Iraq because they were starving to death. I mean, she's known. She's a vicious reactionary around the world. We have this Jones guy, retired general, national security advisor, who is, you know, in the camp of Brzezinski, Obama's advisor. Janet Napolitano. She is reactionary. She called him the National Guard in the state of Arizona against the Mexican population. She has supported the ICE raids, which have attacked the Mexican community and are really, really reactionary. Robert Gates, I'm going to talk about him more in a minute, Secretary of Defense. under Bush and Obama. Obama is keeping, he's keeping Gates as the Secretary of Defense. And the Secretary of Defense, the real name for that is the Secretary of War. And Susan Rice, and she was Clinton's, she's going to be the ambassador to the UN. She was Clinton's chief advisor on Africa. She was responsible for the murder, the assassination of Laurent Kabila in the Congo. She was responsible for the bombing of the pharmaceutical factory in Sudan. And all of these things that happened, she will continue to do that. And we know that Rahm Emanuel, complete Zionist, supports just, you know, as reactionary. People heard the comments his father made against the Arab population. Joe Biden, vice president, he wrote the crime bill. Biden wrote the crime bill. He wrote the crime bill that put 100,000 new police on the streets of African communities all around this country. And right after that, what happened? We saw Amadou Diallo. We saw Abner Louima. We saw just this rash of police murders. He wrote that. It gave $9.7 billion, the crime bill did, to building of prisons, which benefited Wall Street. And by the way, the person who was responsible for carrying out the implementation of getting the police, the new police, on the streets of African communities was Eric Holder, who at the time was Deputy Attorney General under Clinton. So Obama's economic team, same old parasites and crooks. Tim Geithner, Secretary of the Treasury, he has been the head of the New York Federal Reserve Bank. He was there as the Fed bank, you know, chief, while the Wall Street bankers were looting everything they could get with the subprime mortgage derivatives. And he didn't do anything about it. And you saw the day he was appointed, the stock market went up for the first day in months. So it showed they love him. Wall Street loves him. Robert Rubin, a horrible crook, a criminal. These guys need to be on trial. He was Secretary of the Treasury under Clinton, and he fought for the repeal of what's called the Glass-Steagall Act. That was regulations on the stock market that didn't allow it to do this massive, crazy trading. And it was put into place under Roosevelt during the Depression. He fought for the repeal of that, which meant that Wall Street banks could then do anything they want to anybody around the world. They raided currencies of impoverished countries all around the world. They crashed stock markets, everything. The day after that passed in Congress, Rubin quit being the Secretary of the Treasury and went to, I think it was Goldman Sachs, where he is a CEO today, and he made millions of dollars off that. And Penny Pritzker was Obama's finance chair. She's one of the 400 richest people in the United States, and she invented the subprime mortgage. And you can look that up more. We have to moving on a little bit. Obama's top advisors, Brzezinski and Madeleine Albright, who were responsible for war, for under Carter, under Clinton, and Robert Gates, worked under Brzezinski in the Carter administration. Gates was Brzezinski's gopher. And he was part of the Iran-Contra scandal, in which, you know, I remember really studying that a lot in terms of that's where it exposed that the United States was dealing drugs and bringing crack cocaine into the African community. That's where that started first coming out. It was well documented. But the other side of that was also that the U.S. was selling arms to Iran to get these hostages out that the Iranians were holding. And Robert Gates was the person that negotiated all that was involved in all of that. So what does Obama stand for? He's against reparations to the African community. He attacked African fathers on Father's Day. He doesn't even mention the mass imprisonment of African people, that there's 2.4 5 million people in prison in the United States, and half of them are African. He voted for the FISA, which was the reactionary bill that I think was something about the secret trials, and it condones the torture. And he's pro-Israel. He said he will bomb Pakistan and escalate in Afghanistan, which is already happening. And Obama got more Wall Street financial backing than any candidate from either party. So Obama says it's a post-racial America. But the reality is that more than half those in prison are African. 1 in 8 young African men is in prison, etc. 72% of all the drugs sold in the United States are used and sold by white people. But prisons are full of African and Mexican people. So Obama says he will create a multi-billion-dollar economic plan. He's going to create 2.5 million jobs. He will rebuild infrastructure, roads, bridges, create a green economy, and do a stimulus plan like Roosevelt's during the Depression. But it can't work, because during the Depression, the U.S. didn't have $11 trillion worth of debt. It didn't have all these bad loans that are all up in the whole world economic system. It didn't, you know, it didn't have massive foreclosures going on, right? You know, that was the basis of that crash. It had a strong dollar. It had a dollar backed by gold. And none of that is real now. None of that exists now. And it's a whole different situation. What really brought the U.S. out of the Depression was the Second Imperialist War, the World War II, that let the U.S. ended up being the country that controlled the world economy. And all of the resources from Africa, from Asia, from Latin America then began pouring into the U.S. as the U.S. controlled imperialism. And that's what brought wealth and prosperity in the 40s and 50s. So right now we have this post-racial America, quote unquote, but with this economic crisis, we have white people arming themselves in record numbers. We have 4,000 U.S. Army troops stationed at Fort Stewart, Georgia, for the purpose of controlling civil unrest inside the United States. And now they just announced the other day, 20,000 more U.S. troops are going to be stationed inside the United States in the next couple of years for the purpose of controlling the population inside of the U.S. These troops have trained in Iraq for 35 months. Now they're coming here to do that here. We see AFRICOM trying to make Africa a military base of the United States. And we know that Africa has 87% of all the minerals that the U.S. and Western economies need to survive, like oil, uranium, bauxite, tin, coltan, which is, we see the struggle going on in Congo right now. And coltan is used for computers and cell phones. And the majority of the resources of coltan are concentrated in Congo. So what is the origins of this crisis and what will solve it? Just to go through this really fast. Africa for 5,000 years had the most powerful civilization on the planet. That there always has been a world trade. This isn't new. The trade went from Africa and from Southern Africa into the Arab world, India, China, all the way, you know, people say even, you know, with ships to the Americas. Things were traded, ivory, silk, all kinds of items and commodities were traded around the world. But in this same time in history, in the Middle Ages and before, Europe was impoverished, it was oppressed, it was disease-ridden, it had the plague, it had warlike, it was wars, people had feudalism, which meant that most people were like serfs tied to the land. It was isolated from the world economy. So as the chairman tells us, what did Europe do to save itself? It began an assault on Africa. It turned African human beings into Europe's most lucrative commodity. The first stock market was the Amsterdam Stock Exchange, founded in 1602 with shares of the Dutch East India Company, which was the Dutch company for the trade of African people. So the stock market is built on African people. The origin of the dollar sign is the shackles that were put on enslaved, and so it comes from the Spanish word for slave is esclavo, and the word for nail is clavo. And that when the Spanish slave traders kept their books, instead of writing African, African, African to say how much their cargo was, they made a symbol that stood for esclavo, an S with a nail through it, and that was the symbol for the shackles. So we can see that Europe and the Industrial Revolution in Europe and in the 1800s came about through the trade in African people, bringing wealth into Europe, flooding it with wealth for the first time. And we see that the white ruling class of Europe changed from the aristocracy to a ruling class, a bourgeoisie, based on the enslavement of African people and the theft of the resources of the peoples around the world. But also the white middle class was built that way too. And the white working class, because peasants in Europe became workers because of the trade in African people. Suddenly, they couldn't just be on the farms anymore. They needed workers to build the ships in Liverpool to go out in the triangular trade, and this created a working class in Europe. So this means that the entire white population, including workers, sits on the pedestal of the oppression of African people and the oppressed peoples around the world. And this is one of the key points of the chairman's theory and understanding. So white people came to America from Europe. They got jobs as slave catchers, bounty hunters. There was rebellions, the famous Stono Rebellion in South Carolina in 1739. There was constant resistance in the African community, but this entire economy of the US and Europe is built on trade in African people and on the theft of the people's resources around the world. African people were auctioned off as commodities. This is Richmond, Virginia, Shaco Bottom, just in this neighborhood alone of Richmond, Virginia. 350,000 African people were auctioned as a commodity in this country from the years about 1750 to 1865. And, we just have to realize that how many jobs that spawned, how that spawned transportation, railroads, hotels, lawyers, auctioneers, colleges, it was economic stimulus for the white population. It was the resistance of African people enslaved that ended chattel slavery, that forced it to end inside this country. But white workers continued to terrorize African people out of jobs, wealth, and independent communities. Every time, all over the country, that African people gained wealth and had the ability to have their own economy, like in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Rosewood, Florida, these were attacked by white people, burnt down, and this wealth was incorporated into the white society today. There was convict leasing that re-enslaved the entire African population in the South after the Civil War up until about the 1930s, that basically now, instead of plantation owners owning African people, the state owned them and leased them out to coal mines, phosphate mines, plantations, and the motto was, one dies, get another. They just worked African people to death. People, this is something that needs to be in the history books. People have to understand that this was what rebuilt the wealth of the South, the Southern states, after the Civil War. That we know that this comes from the genocide of indigenous people that was carried out by white volunteer armies and cavalries that committed absolute genocide, put people in mass graves, that we see colonialism in Africa in the same period, Africans enslaved on their own land so Europe could steal their resources. And that's my phone. I should have turned it off, sorry. And so again, we have to say that the entire white population sits on a pedestal of the oppression of African people. In the 1960s, there were anti-colonial movements all around the world fighting for liberation. The Black Power movement inside this country urban African people fighting for liberation as part of recognizing that African people are a colony inside this country. There was a U.S. counterinsurgency, a war against that movement called COINTELPRO that defeated the movement inside this country, just as the counterinsurgency defeated the movements all around the world, or attempted to. And that was responsible for the murder of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Fred Hampton. And we see that what the United States did was set up a system called neocolonialism so that African people and peoples around the world, their own population, could be a puppet of US power to carry out the will of the United States. We know that part of the counterinsurgency of the United States government against the African movement was the imposition of drugs, heroin, and cocaine into the African community, controlled by the CIA, that's still going on, that was worth $500 billion to $1 trillion a year to the United States economy, that is obviously laundered in every bank in the United States. I think this is a really good chart because it shows the drug trade, the relationship of the CIA, of all banks, and the prison population, which is also an economic stimulus to the white population. So counterinsurgency is economic stimulus for white people. And it includes gentrification, it includes the crime watch, all of these things that keep the African community under martial law. The US has the largest prison population in the world, and California as a state has the second largest population of prisoners in the world. That the imprisonment of African children inside the United States, just like it happened during the time of convict leasing, where children were kidnapped and forced into labor, that this is big business. There's at least 100,000 child prisoners in the US, unlike most countries anywhere in the world. And it's part of this prison economy, this $150 billion a year growth industry, and it hires more than 500,000 workers. Prisons are slave labor. They are used by Target, Kmart, Merrill Lynch is gone, but Best Western, Honda, Allstate, as slave labor, and it's a multi-billion dollar business. So we say that white America sits on the pedestal of African oppression, that white families have 10 times the median net worth of African families because of these conditions that we've seen. African families lost billions, maybe even $250 billion the African community lost because of the foreclosures and the subprime mortgage crisis. But Wall Street made trillions of dollars on it, now getting bailed out with your money, your taxpayers' money, to bail them out so they can keep that stolen loot. Stolen Wall Street bankers got bailed out. The African community is pushed deeper into poverty, targeted for increased prison incarceration, and criminalized for the subprime. U.S. economic and the loss of world power is the logical conclusion of all these factors. So this is about the fact that the African People's Socialist Party is organizing One Africa, One Nation, African Socialist International, which I'm sure Chairman Omalia Yeshitela will be talking about, organizing African people all around the world with the understanding that Africa's resources are for African people, and that Africans are one people around the world, and the thing is part of the whole worldwide movement for the liberation of people and their resources and their culture and their own governments. And for us in the white community, if we want to be part of the world that's building, that's transforming, then we have to join the majority of the people on the planet Earth in solidarity. And African People Solidarity Committee is the way that white people can join and participate in this future, as African people and people on the planet Earth are going to be transforming and taking down this vicious system. We don't need to try to rescue a system built and sustained on slavery, on genocide, on torture, on suffering, on stealing people's land and making them live on 50 cents a day. We need to get rid of it. It's got to go down the tubes. It's time when, you know, a new world has to be built, and that is what the Uhuru movement is about. Uhuru.
Uhuru. And that That was a really powerful, really excellent presentation by African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess. And again, I want to encourage you, if you have not been tuning in to the 11 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time program called Voices of the People, you can hear both African People's Socialist Party Chairman Amalia Shetela and African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess talking about these same kind of issues, the crisis of U.S. imperialist economy worldwide, the significance of the presidency of Barack Obama and his cabinet picks as they continue to be revealed and continue to show that it's basically more of the same. And I just want to also encourage you if you have not already, to subscribe to uhururadio.com, to become a paying subscriber, where for a minimum of $10 a month, you can gain unlimited access to the speeches of African People's Socialist Party Chairman Amalia Shetela. And there's so many speeches there now covering that are available to the subscribers, covering so many issues from the development of parasitic capitalism and understanding of dialectical materialism and the development of parasitic capitalism from its inception to the significance of the liberation struggles worldwide and particularly the significance of the Black Power movement in the U.S. of the late 60s, how that opened up a democratic space for so many sectors of the community and of the population here in the U.S., as well as providing inspiration and solidarity around the world, and how that movement was crushed, and how the Uhuru movement has fought since that time to rebuild the movement. But he talks a lot about the counter in many of the different presentations. He talks about the impact of the U.S. counterinsurgency war, which has become a term that has been is widely used today, often in reference to the insurgency against U.S. occupation in Iraq, and you hear the term insurgency commonly now. But Chairman O'Malley has been talking about it since the early 90s, where in reference to the program to suppress and crush the liberation movement of African people right here in the U.S., he's been exposing and built an entire organization, the Uhuru Movement, the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, that is growing and growing around the U.S. with the specific purpose of pushing back the counterinsurgency, opening up the democratic space, fighting for the basic democratic rights of freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of political association, to allow African people to rebuild a movement that can fight for genuine justice and freedom and a real future for all people here in the U.S. and around the world. So he talks a lot about that in the presentations, and it's just an incredible library that's available online to the paying subscribers. And if you can't do that at that time, it's free to tune in at 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time every week. This week, the program that was aired, the speech that was aired, was the chairman's presentation from the same event that we just heard African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess speak at, and it was a really, really good presentation. And also, you can listen over your telephone, and you can listen, and listening over your telephone is free. Of course, if you have minutes you have to pay for, you would have to pay for those, but if you listen during your free minute time, I know here in the U.S., most people's plans include free minutes on the weekend or on Sunday, which is when the live broadcast is, or a lot of people have free minutes after 7 o'clock at night or after 9 o'clock at night. And on the telephone listening, you have the option to either listen to the current broadcast if you're calling in on Sundays when the live broadcast is happening, or you can choose to listen to a previous week's program. So you can, you know, if you did miss the chairman's speech from this week, you know, throughout the course of the week, you can call in on your telephone. You'd be able to listen to that for free over your telephone. So definitely access that resource and that knowledge, because it's going to really help you understand what's happening in the world, and so that we can be a part of it, so that we can change it. And I want to encourage people as well to check out uhurusolidarity.org. There's a lot of stuff happening, and most significantly, coming up in January, the African People's Solidarity Committee will be holding our annual conference where we sum up the year's work, sum up the period. Chairman O'Malley will be speaking at that, as of course will Chairwoman Penny Hess. And we'll have different trainings, different political education happening, and present reports and talk about our work for the year to come. That's going to take place in St. Petersburg, and there it takes place at a nature park where there is camping available. So if you can make it to St. Pete, there's low-cost housing on site, or of course, you can find housing of your own as well if you're not the camping sort. But come and check it out. It's going to be a phenomenal conference. We thank you for listening.